The World Health Organization and the International Red Cross have begun an assessment of the healthcare system in Iraq. They report severe problems in many parts of the country where hospitals have been looted and records destroyed. Some medical professionals reportedly have armed themselves and are living in hospitals in an effort to defend the facilities. WHO spokeswoman Melanie Zipperer says the most important immediate goal is to halt the looting, vandalism, and arson. She says beyond the security concerns, the most urgent needs are drinking water, electricity, and access to basic medical care.
Medical staff will not be able to continue working unless a system is put in place to recompense them. Maintenance and cleaning. Many hospitals have been damaged by conflict or looting. They need repairs and they must be kept clean.
The United Nations Security Council has identified $395 million in priority humanitarian needs, including food, agricultural goods, medicine, and health supplies to be shipped to Iraq. Most of the goods were already in transit when the war began under the United Nations-administered Oil for Food program, which has had an established distribution network in Iraq since 1997. The program was interrupted when the UN evacuated personnel from Iraq on March 17th, although the Security Council has authorized extending the program for 45 days. Michael Van Royen directs the Johns Hopkins Center for International Emergency Disaster and Refugee Studies in Baltimore, Maryland. During a visit to Iraq before the war, he reviewed humanitarian contingency plans. He found a public health care system weakened by the economic sanctions the UN imposed after the Gulf War in 1991. He says what he hadn't expected in the aftermath of the current conflict was widespread looting and lawlessness directed at hospitals.
I didn't expect that at all. I mean, Iraq is not like, Afghanistan. I mean, it's not that people were deprived of resources forever. Yes, they had to sell off many of their assets to make ends meet, but people were not starving. There was not, there was trade going on. People were employed still. And so the economy, while weakened, was still functional. So it really surprised me to hear that this widespread looting, I did not expect it or predict it at all. And that being the case, I think that it's just going to increase the needs for rehabilitation such that we didn't expect structural rehabilitation. We thought that, okay, hospitals would be intact and there'd be lack of basic equipment, but we could get it there. But now, it were light fixtures, wires, and sinks and everything else, as well as hospital equipment, is just gone. And if that's really the case, the rehabilitative needs are substantial.
Now, you had mentioned that when you were in Iraq in January, you were looking at contingency plans. What kind of plans were you looking at? And did this looting in hospitals kind of change the equation?
Yes, the contingency planning that really was going on was on behalf of the non-government organizations who were in the country, of which there were very few. I think only 9 or so agencies were really allowed to operate within the country. And so as the emergency continued to build, as the military forces build in the region, organizations were amassing to the borders of Oman and Kuwait, getting ready to come in. But those organizations are still not functional and not able to work within the country. And so organizations that had a foothold in the country already really were the only ones that were trying to plan. I don't think anybody planned for this, though. I mean, I think that people really planned for greater amounts of population displacement, in which there turned out to be not very many at all. I think they were worried about food emergencies, but, we wouldn't see food emergencies for the next couple months anyway, because people, have had access to advanced rations.
Now, what is it going to take to get the healthcare system up and running again?
I think first and foremost is security. I think that the reestablishment of civil society, the reestablishment of authority and of a secure environment is, I think, job one anyway. If that can really be accomplished, then it'll set the stage for a kind of a more concerted rehabilitative effort. And then it's really going to take. There's levels of need. The first is going to be re-equipping hospitals and clinics and the healthcare system, which will need to happen relatively urgently. And then it's actually re-equipping the personnel, and that is through education, because I think that, again, much of the health manpower in Iraq had excellent health manpower, but people have really suffered from lack of educational opportunities, lack of outside contact, and so there's going to be a significant need to really bolster the health manpower issues.
Now, how do you go about doing all that?
Well, I think that, you know, non-government organizations and UN agencies and WHO really need to have an organized and concerted and a coordinated effort, which is not always easy with non-government organizations anyway, because people are kind of doing their own thing. And so to really coordinate the provision of adequate and appropriate hospital services. We're not talking about, you know, trying to fly in MRIs and CTs and dropping them off. We're talking about re-equipping operating rooms with basic supplies and re-equipping clinics with scales and centrifuges and basic things like that. So a coordinated national assessment of what really is gone and what needs to be replaced is going to be necessary, and a delivery and accountability for those deliveries, and then eventually to find out where people are at in terms of their health education.
What do you think are the greatest challenges to get these jobs done?
I think as in any humanitarian emergency, the two major challenges are really coordination, meaning that people, talk to each other and agree with each other and get on the same page, because it's a mammoth task to reestablish this food distribution system that is going to be necessary to keep and to reestablish and to revitalize the healthcare industry there, and to transition it over into some sort of, you know, semi-private system that it has been and worked pretty well. And sort of coordinate organizations like all those non-government organizations, and there are, you know, 50, 60, 70 of those probably lining up in Amman and elsewhere now ready to come in, anywhere from very big organizations like CARE, for example, to very, very small organizations. So coordinating all those activities is really very difficult. And the second thing is logistics, just getting things to where they need to go. So just because you're a physician from Dayton, Ohio, and you end up showing up to a hospital in southern Iraq, means nothing if you don't have any equipment or supplies. I guess it's a great misunderstanding that we think by throwing, you know, doctors and professionals into a situation, it's not really going to help so much. I mean, what those people need are, you know, equipment and supplies, and to reinvigorate their health finance system and all of it. So it's a complicated job that needs a lot of coordination.
And what does Iraq have going for it, hopefully to make the job not such an arduous task?
Iraq has much to go going in its favor in terms of rehabilitation. I mean, it's a country that has well-established professionals. It's a country that is very well-developed, has an excellent education system, has an excellent healthcare system at baseline, has a lot of resources, and it is really very capable of rising to this challenge, especially if there's the establishment, again, of security and civil society. If that happens, if security is maintained and there's, you know, reprisals are minimal and, you know, instability or ethnic instability is minimal, then really there's no reason why Iraq should not be able to really do very well.
Michael Van Royen heads the Johns Hopkins Center for International Emergency, Disaster, and Refugee Studies. I'm Roseanne Skirball.